Morning, everybody. It's been good to be with you so far. It has been really good just the past couple of weeks to be here. I forgot how much I would miss being here when I was gone for just 1 week. And it really makes a big difference. And then when we didn't have classes Wednesday night, it feels like forever since we've been together already. And it's only been a few days. I look forward to the time when we get to do this for all eternity. Isn't that going to be great? Yes. Turn to Exodus 19. That's where we're going to start. This is one of those mornings where I have too many things to say and not enough time to say them. And so I'm going to try to condense all of that for your sake and for mine. But I struggled with how do I convey all that I want to convey and still be on time. And sometimes that means I just didn't think long enough. But I think on this, it feels like there's too many good things around this topic that we're going to talk about today. And so it's going to be a little bit odd and backwards. Normally you have a pretty short introduction, right? And then that leads you to your main point, and that's where you spend all of your time. I almost feel like I'm going to lead us to the main point, but that'll be fairly short, okay? So don't get worried that this introduction takes forever. The introduction will take a while. That'll, I think, hopefully build up and help us more understand the very short but main point at the end. Some of you are skeptical. I hope to relieve those fears. In Exodus 19, the children of Israel have already been brought out of Egypt. They're on their wanderings. And God is going to appear to them. And this, to me, is one of the most awe-inspiring, fantastic chapters in the Bible. Just because it's hard to imagine being at this place. You think about, and some of you have seen way more than I have. I've not been through a lot of rough weather or things like that. But maybe the most awe-inspiring or terrifying thing you've seen in nature. How many of you have gone through, let's say, a tornado? Okay, so there's some tornado people in here. Anybody hurricanes? Not so much hurricanes. We were in Tampa, which you would think meant we got lots of hurricanes, but we really didn't. We just got the rain, you know, but not any of the real rough stuff there on the bay. Any volcanoes? Hey, we got a volcano. All right. Pretty cool. All kinds of things that you can look at, and even a big storm, right? Like the thunder. I mean, I was outside just a few weeks ago whenever we had our good rain again. I don't remember whenever that was. And I remember I had to go run outside because something was left uncovered, and I remembered, oh, this is going to get soaked and ruined. I better go out there. And it had not thundered yet, right? So I thought I was safe. And then as soon as I get out there, boom, right over my head, and I thought I was going to die, you know, right there. I'm a grown man. I know it's only thunder, but I almost just hit the ground. Like, so to see that and moments like that, I cannot even really imagine Exodus 19. And rather than me just describe it, we're going to read it. Because I think rather than me trying to tell you what God has to say, it's much better for God's own description here. So this is like the long introduction part. And it's good, though, if you will just imagine being one of the children of Israel who is living through this and what they are experiencing. On the third new moon, after the people of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. They set out from Rephidim and came into the wilderness of Sinai, and they encamped in the wilderness. There Israel encamped before the mountain, while Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him out of the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasure possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel. So Moses came and called the elders of the people and set before them all these words that the Lord had commanded him. All the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. And Moses reported the words of the people to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, I am coming to you in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and may also believe you forever." When Moses told the words of the people to the Lord said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments and be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all people. And you shall set limits for all the people all around, saying, 'Take care not to go up into the mountain or touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain.'" So Moses went down from the mountain to the people and consecrated the people, and they washed their garments. And he said to the people, "Be ready for the third day. Do not go near a woman." Pause there for just a moment before you get to what's actually about to happen, and just take it all in. You've got this basically three-day period. On the third day, the Lord will come down on the mountain. And he is telling them through Moses, you guys need to get ready. This is going to be a serious deal. You need to wash, to be kind of ceremonially clean. And as I come down on the mountain, you'll hear this long trumpet blast, and that's when you approach to hear what I have to say. And he's doing this not just to show his power, but also so that as the people are following Moses, they have a very real sense of Moses is in charge because God put him in charge, and I'm not going to question it. Right? Which didn't last for too long. You know that they have problems later with that, rebelling against Moses. But all the same, here's the idea. I know you guys saw all the plagues not too long ago, but in case you need a visual reminder of who I am, I'm going to give it to you. We tell our kids sometimes to go and sit in your room and think about what you've done, or think about why this is important, or, right, to actually pause and think on the gravity of what has just happened. And here God is telling them, you need to sit and think about this for a few days. Like, before you see me come down on this mountain, you just need to pause. And this is all you need to be prepared for. The rest of your life can pretty well slow down. I just imagine going into your room for a few days and just thinking, God is about to come down on the mountain, and I'm going to see it with my own eyes. That's what you have, that space coming into the rest of this chapter now. On the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled. Then Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. And as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him in thunder. The Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go down and warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord to look, and many of them perish. And let the priests who come near to the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them." And Moses said to the Lord, "The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you yourself warned us, saying, 'Set limits around the mountain and consecrate it.'" And the Lord said to him, "Go down and come up, bringing Aaron with you, but do not let the priests and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them." So Moses went down to the people and told them. So if you imagine this scene, right, at the foot of this mountain, all the people are gathered because they hear the trumpet blast, and they come and they see there's a dark, thick cloud, thunder and lightning, and the whole mountain is on, it's smoking because the Lord has come down on the mountain in fire, and it's trembling. The mountain itself is quaking, okay? This is that thing that's hard to imagine. And Moses, these few days before, had already said, make sure that nobody comes near the mountain. Man, animal, doesn't matter. If they come near the mountain, they are to be put to death. That's how serious this is. Now, you've already got the warning. When you see this mountain look like this, who's going to walk up to it? Anybody in this room brave enough to try walking up to the mountain? I'm staying as, like, I know I'm supposed to come because there's the trumpet blast and it's calling me. I'm supposed to go towards it, but I don't want to be anywhere near it, do you? It says that the people trembled. They're just in fear of how great this display of power is. And even with all of that, as Moses comes up to the mountain, God says, go down there and remind them not to come near the mountain, as if they needed a reminder. Nobody's coming anywhere near it. Maybe there were a few, I'll say dumb people, that had the curiosity, adventure factor way too high in them, and they were just starting to think about it and getting twitchy. I don't know. Either way, God says, go down there and remind them. Now, the reason I bring up this chapter is not only how awesome it is, but also it sets us up for where we're going, okay? So you have this God who, when he comes down, you cannot really approach. You can get up to a certain point. You come up to the mountain, but even that, you're afraid to even do it. You're doing it in trembling. This continues right when, go down to Exodus 40. So they finally put a tabernacle together. God has given them instructions on everything exactly, specifications on how this tabernacle is to be built. Moses himself puts it all together. It says in chapter 40, and at the end of chapter 40, here's how you close out Exodus. This is where the presence of the Lord is to dwell among his people. Exodus 40, verse 34, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Throughout all their journeys, whenever the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, the people of Israel would set out. But if the cloud was not taken up, they did not set out till the day that it was taken up. For the cloud of the Lord was on the tabernacle by day, and fire was in it by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel throughout all their journeys. So again, the first time tabernacles erected, imagine if the first time that this building was put together, the glory of the Lord came down into the building, so much so that you could not walk into the building. All right, that's what they're experiencing. This unapproachable God who is too high and above and holy for you to even come near. But they do come near, right, in a sense. Go to Leviticus 16, and this is where we'll kind of start bridging out of our introduction and then get to our points, right, in the New Testament. Pretty well all of their sacrifices are to take place outside of the main tabernacle. Right, I mean, there's an altar out there. If you're not familiar with the construction, we don't have to go into all the details and specifications. But basically, you have this outer court, you have the holy part. I don't remember a good word for that all of a sudden. Okay, but you go inside the tent, and then there's an inner tent beyond that, the Holy of Holies, like the inner sanctuary. And nobody goes in there. It's too holy. If you go in there, you're going to die. All right. One time a year they get to go in there, and only one person gets to go in there, and he has to go through a lot of ritual before he can go in there. Again, that's where the presence of God dwells among his people, and they can't go in, they can't see it, they can't look in there. This one time a year they go in, and that's only to make atonement for the sins of the people. And we won't read all of Leviticus 16, but Leviticus 16 is about Aaron, who is the high priest at the time, what he's supposed to go through before he enters into that most holy place that nobody else is allowed to go in, that nobody else is allowed to approach. And even in his instructions, so like the day of, he's supposed to get up, he's supposed to wash, he has all these priestly garments that he's got to put on. It's a big ceremony. There's sacrifices involved and an order of things. Start in verse 11. This is just one of at least two places where God puts it this way. Leviticus 16:11. Aaron shall present the bull as a sin offering for himself and shall make atonement for himself and for his house. He shall kill the bull as a sin offering for himself, and he shall take a censer full of coals of fire from the altar before the Lord and two handfuls of sweet incense, beaten small, and he shall bring it inside the veil and put the incense on the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat that is over the testimony, so that he does not die. So even Aaron, who gets to go in, before he can really go in, he's got to smoke up the place with incense so that he doesn't even really get a good view of what's in there. Because if he does, he will die. All of this to say, look at how God is often portrayed and portrays himself that he's untouchable. You cannot come near him. But then you read things like in the book of James, it says, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Now, out of everything that we've just read, building up to this, have you seen anything that is a draw near to God kind of situation? Pretty much it says, stay back or you'll die. And then when we get to the New Testament, you have this invitation, not just a command, but an invitation to draw near to God, and he will draw near to you on top of that. So not just do you get to approach him, but he comes to you. Hebrews chapter 10 is really where our main point or points come from. And I know that one of the adult classes is covering Hebrews. So if you've already covered some of this, I apologize. It's just what was on my mind. Rich, you may be looking at me going, I just talked about this. What are you doing? I doubt that. Either way, we'll at least get some reminder in there, if nothing else. And for those of us who are not in that class, and maybe you haven't considered this in a long time, that'll be something good for you to think about as well. Hebrews 10 gives us the big change here. The big change in you go from God being completely unapproachable, and he still is in the sense that he is holy and pure, and he cannot abide by sin, and there's no way to be in his presence except by what the writer of Hebrews talks about. And the big turning point is that God, remember, God came down on the mountain in Mount Sinai. God comes down again, but in a very different sense. And we see his glory in a different way, right? That's how the book of John opens up, that God became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory as of the only begotten Son. Only Son of the Father. It's just in a very different sense. And because of what he's done, he makes God approachable. This is that spot where there's just too much to talk about. Hebrews 10, there's already a bunch of therefores and conclusion arguments, and we don't have time to build all of Hebrews out and everything. But hopefully with the backdrop of what we just read in Exodus and Leviticus, you can see who God is a little bit, and then also see how great Jesus is. Because he's what allows us to draw near to God. Hebrews chapter 10, we'll start in verse 19. And right from this, the writer of Hebrews gives us three things that we should be doing based on our ability, or based on what Christ has done. Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he has opened for us through the curtain, that is, through his flesh, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. He uses a lot of that same language because the people who would be reading Hebrews, particularly for the first time, are those who are Jews who have converted to Christ. They now know Christ, but they are having some real serious struggles, largely due to persecutions, that it would sure be much easier to just go back into what they already knew. And the writer of Hebrews is encouraging them and telling them, don't go back to what you had. That was okay, but what you have now in Christ is so much better. Right, because we just talked about how Aaron could only go into that Holy of Holies one time a year, and even then he couldn't even really see what he was doing. And then here, what does he say at the beginning of this passage? Since we have confidence to enter the holy places. That's already vastly different. We have confidence to walk into the holy places, to enter in to where the presence of God is, to be in his presence. They didn't have that. That's not something that they could do. And it's only by the blood of Jesus, not by the blood of the bull that Aaron had to sprinkle, right? He had to go through all of that ritual, but by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain that separated the Holy of Holies from everything else outside, Jesus is now essentially, by his body on the cross, allowed us to enter in to the presence of God. And since we have a great priest over the house of God, that being Jesus Christ himself, based on all of that, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith. That's the first thing that he says. Let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith. Go back to that mountain scene. Can you imagine if on the mountain, God called down from the mountain after he had told you, don't ever approach this mountain, you will die for it. Can you imagine if he said, okay, now you can approach. But all of the smoke and trembling and the trumpet blast is still going on. How would you have drawn near to that mountain? You ever see a kid who is not sure if they're in trouble and they are trying to approach their parent and they're not really sure how well this is going to work out for them, right? That's probably how I would have approached that mountain. Very cautiously, like, I might be in big trouble if I do this. But he says instead, we have a great priest over the house of God. Because of that, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith. That you can actually walk to God confidently because of what Christ has done. And this draw near means that you can look closely at what he is doing and what he has done. It means that you can get to know him better. It means that even if you have some past, because all of us have a past that we are not proud of, varying degrees maybe, but we all have things that we have done that are against God's will. Whatever that past is, by Jesus' blood, you can still draw near to God. So let us do that with a true heart and full assurance of faith. Let us also hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. He's talking to people who are already wavering. And in this sense, we're talking about what's the confession of our hope? That Christ died? That he didn't just die in vain, he died for us. That he was buried, and then he rose again on the third day. And that he reigns with God on high. And that one day, we will be called home to be with him for eternity. He's saying, you got to take that and hold on to it. For he who promised is faithful. You have a promise if you are in Christ that this world is not it. That this world is just temporary. That, sure, this world has its difficulties, it has struggles, it has very hard times, whether that is our health or losing people that we love, or just sometimes the day-to-day trying to keep up with everything. This world is hard. But we have a promise, and the one who gave us that promise is faithful, so let's hold on to the one that we have that promise through, Christ. And remember that every day as we go through this life, that nothing lets that promise go. It can't slip through the cracks. He doesn't forget it. He who promised is faithful. And then this is the last thing. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. Not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. I feel like I've heard this verse so many times, but only in the context of, you better be at church. Right? Like, this is only to say, you must be here on Sunday mornings. There is truth. We should be here. It's a good place to be. But the writer here is not just talking about this once a week kind of thing that you guys get together on and make sure that you don't neglect that. He's just talking about meeting together, that you meet together. That should be part of our lives, that we meet together throughout the week, not in some structured necessarily way of, okay, it'll be every Tuesday night and every Thursday night. This is just as you live life together. As the church, outside of these walls, here's what you're supposed to be doing. Encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. So sure, be here on Sunday. It's a great place to be. Be here on Wednesday if you've got opportunity. It's a great place to be. But that's not the limit of this verse, nor is it the main point of this verse. It's that we should be together throughout the time that we have to encourage one another. And all that I want to leave you with, as far as maybe if you need any kind of a challenge out of this morning, is because of how good Christ is, because of the promise that we have, because of what we have to look forward to, consider how to stir one another up to love and good works. Melissa and I were talking about this, and we already noticed that there's a lot of love and good works that already goes on here. And so if you're a big part of that, this is not to make you feel like, oh, I'm not doing enough. I need to do more love and good works. This is just to say, as you're meeting together, see if you take note of ways that you can just encourage, that you can use that time wisely, that you can use that time to maybe stir up love and good works. Invite people in on things that you're doing. What we did last night was just have a conversation about some of the people that we spend a lot of time with, and where are some ways that we can encourage them to be more loving. And that's not to say that we can't look at ourselves and know that we also have ways to be more loving. But one of the great things about being around each other all the time is that you get to know what I need to work on, and I get to know what you need to work on, and both of us should be open to be able to talk about that in all humility, knowing that none of us are perfect. And so because of how Christ is wonderfully our high priest and the promise that we have in him, take some time this week and consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. Give it an actual bit of time and think on it. If you're here this morning and maybe you've never considered that, and maybe you've never even considered Christ, this is a perfect time to do it. Hopefully you've thought about that. Even though we have this holy and unapproachable and all-powerful God, he has made a way for us to approach him through the blood of his Son. If you need to put him on in baptism this morning, or you need prayers of the church for any other reason, I hope you'll come as we stand and sing.
As the deer pants for the water, so my soul.